अग्रणीर एषा धूर्यश्चार्जुनयोर्द्वयो उधाश इव दुर्धर्षा समुद्र इव दुस्थरः।
Amongst great bowmen, this child will be as good as Arjuna. He will be as irresistible as fire and as unsurpassable as the ocean. This verse you did yesterday. Underwent severe types of penances purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. In this purport, Srila Prabhupada is describing the life of Arjuna. The first half of this narration was read in Srimad Bhagavatam class yesterday. Today we will read the second half. Sometimes he underwent severe types of penances, and later on he was rewarded by Indradev. Lord Shiva also wanted to try the strength of Arjuna. In the form of an aborigine, Lord Shiva met him. There was a great fight between the two, and at last Lord Shiva was satisfied with him and disclosed his identity. Arjuna prayed to the Lord in all humbleness, and the Lord, being pleased with him, presented him the Pashupat weapon. He acquired many other important weapons from different demigods. He received Dandastra from Yamaraj, Pashastra from Varuna, Antardhana Astra from Kuvera, the treasure of the heavenly kingdom. Indra wanted him to come to the heavenly kingdom, the Indraloka planet, beyond the moon planet. In that planet, he was cordially received by the local residents, and he was awarded reception in the heavenly parliament of Indradev. Then he met Indradev, who not only presented him with his Vajra weapon, but also taught him the military and musical science as used in the heavenly planet. In one sense, Indra is the real father of Arjuna, and therefore indirectly he wanted to entertain Arjuna with the famous society girl of heaven, Urvashi, the celebrated beauty. The society girls of heaven are lusty, and Urvashi was very eager to contact Arjuna, the strongest human being. She met him in his room and expressed her desires, but Arjuna sustained his unimpeachable character by closing his eyes before Urvashi, addressing her as mother of the Kuru dynasty and placing her in the category of his mothers Kunti, Madri, and Shachi Devi, wife of Indradev. Disappointed, Urvashi cursed Arjuna and left. In the heavenly planet, he also met the great celebrated ascetic, Lomasa, and prayed to him for the protection of Maharaj Yudhisthira. When his inimical cousin, Duryodhana, was under the clutches of the Gandharvas, he wanted to save him and requested the Gandharvas to release Duryodhana. But the Gandharvas refused, and thus he fought with them and got Duryodhana released. When all the Pandavas lived incognito, he presented himself in the court of King Virata as a eunuch and was employed as the musical teacher of Uttara, his future daughter-in-law, and was known in the Virata court as Brihannala. As Brihannala, he fought on behalf of Uttara, the son of King Virat, and thus defeated the Kurus in the fight incognito. His secret weapons were safely kept in the custody of a somi tree, and he ordered Uttara to get them back. His identity and his brother's identity were later disclosed to Uttara. Dronacharya was informed of Arjuna's presence in the fight of the Kurus and the Viratas. Later, on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, Arjuna killed many great generals like Karna and others. After the battle of Kurukshetra, he punished Ashwatthama, who had killed all the five sons of Draupadi. Then all the brothers went to Bhishma Dev. It is due to Arjuna only that the great philosophical discourses of the Bhagavad Gita were again spoken by the Lord on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. His wonderful acts on the battlefield of Kurukshetra are vividly described in the Mahabharata. Arjuna was defeated, however, by his son Bhabruvahana at Manipur and fell unconscious when Ulupi saved him. After the disappearance of Lord Krishna, the message was brought by Arjuna to Maharaj Yudhisthira. Again, Arjuna visited Dwaraka, and all the widow wives of Lord Krishna lamented before him. He took them all in the presence of Vasudeva and pacified all of them. Later on, when Vasudeva passed away, he performed his funeral ceremony in the absence of Krishna. While Arjuna was taking all the wives of Krishna to Indraprastha, he was attacked on the way, and he could not protect the ladies in his custody. At last, advised by Vyasadeva, all the brothers headed for Mahaprasthan. On the way, at the request of his brother, he gave up all important weapons as useless, and he dropped them in the water. The great Brahmins are here continuing their prophecy of the future of the life of the newborn child, Parikshit. Maharaj Parikshit, the grandson of Arjuna, had the great fortune of the beautiful darshan of Krishna while residing within the womb of his mother. From such an early stage of life, he learned the nature of Krishna's inconceivable mercy. Sometimes the karma kandis, or even the karma mishra bhaktas, their idea of the mercy of God is when he gives us happiness, protection, the things in life that we enjoy. But from the very beginning, Maharaj Parikshit's realization of God was something very different. It was in a life and death situation where he was in a helpless condition. This Brahmastra of Ashwatthama was coming toward him, and it actually entered into the womb. There is very little room to run or to hide. Plus, he was in a condition physically where he could not move. At this time, where death appeared imminent, a condition that every living being tries to avoid as far as possible. His mother called out for Krishna's help, and Krishna appeared. So it was in the most difficult crisis imaginable that he witnessed Krishna. Not only a difficult crisis as far as birth, death, the terrible, insurmountable Brahmastra weapon. If someone comes to point an ordinary gun at us, we think we are helpless. But the Brahmastra weapon is millions of times more powerful than the greatest of the bombs that man has ever created in the modern age. And it was right there in the womb with Parikshit. And also he was in the womb, which is a very, according to Srimad Bhagavatam, it's a very terrible, painful condition of life. Helpless condition. So it was in utter helplessness and hopelessness that Maharaj Parikshit began his devotional life. And how important this lesson was. He became so attracted to the beauty of Krishna that when he came out of the womb and he saw the things of this world, it did not have any charm for him. He wanted to again experience the beauty and the charm of Krishna. When we begin to taste Krishna, the things of this world become tasteless. As Sripad Yamunacharya prayed, after tasting the sweetness of bhakti, devotion to the Lord, all the beautiful things of this world I was so much attached to when I was a king, they have no appeal. When I think of them, my lips curl in distaste and I spit at the thought. I spit at the thought of being the enjoyer. So he was always searching for Krishna. In everything, in everyone, even as a little tiny baby child, he was just looking for Krishna. Of course, he was Krishna conscious. In a similar way, but in a more perverted state of consciousness, everyone is always looking for Krishna. Even the little baby, he's looking for pleasure from his mother. Actually, he's looking for Krishna. but he's trying to find it in the milk from his mother. Later on, this is called Anamai, where you're looking for Krishna with the misconception that Krishna is food. The animals are also like this. They are always looking for Krishna. But their consciousness is that they're looking for Krishna in the form of eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. They never find Krishna. Therefore, they're never satisfied. They're always in anxiety. So when we're little babies, we're like animals. We're just trying to survive with food. As we grow a little older, pranamoy and so many stages of life we go through, where we begin to develop our nervous system, our brain, our capacity to reason, our senses develop, and then there are so many temptations we are striving to achieve. But actually, all along, we are simply looking for Krishna. But Maharaj Parikshit, who is Krishna is the reservoir of all pleasure. But Maharaj Parikshit, he was conscious of what he was looking for. And he was not being sidetracked like we are. He was fixed. He wouldn't accept anything but Krishna directly, not his indirect illusory energy. And this is what Krishna consciousness means. To discard all the alternatives that material energy gives us, and to keep our mind fixed that I will only accept Krishna. And of course, we connect to Krishna through bhakti, through devotional service. Therefore, that determination keeps us always engaged in Krishna's service. So he came out of the womb, and the great Brahmins are giving him benedictions. And really, the benedictions they're giving him are the information of his own most virtuous future. Parikshit Maharaj was born in the family of pure devotees. Arjuna married Subhadra, the sister of Krishna. This is a very auspicious birth. They had a son, Abhimanu, who married Uttara. Abhimanu gave his life willingly in the service of Krishna in the battlefield of Kurukshetra, and in a most glorious way, at the age of only approximately 16 years, he went back home, back to Godhead, showing his unalloyed surrender to the Lord. So Parikshit Maharaj was born in this situation. And here the Brahmins are prophesizing that this child will be as good as Arjuna in regard to defending the principles of religion. And Srila Prabhupada explains in this beautiful, beautiful five-page purport some of the highlights from the most auspicious life of Arjuna. And how many parallels or similar happenings took place within the life of Arjuna and Parikshit Maharaj. As far as we are concerned, we owe our spiritual lives to this great personality, Arjuna, and his grandson, Parikshit. because it was through their humility and their devotion that the two most important of the Vedic literatures were revealed, Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. And how wonderful it is that both of these great literatures were spoken in times of severe desperation. Arjuna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra was facing on one side the Pandavas, on the other side the Kurus. He had a soft heart, the nature of a devotee. He understood that this fight would be terrible. Millions would die. And as the chief soldier, he would have to take the responsibility. And on both sides were people he loved more dear than his own life. How could he fight against Yudhisthira or Bhima, his two most intimate brothers? How could he fight against Bhishma or Drona, his most well-wishing grandfather and the teacher who gave him everything he knew? Very difficult. In that state, Arjuna became desperate. He was in so much pain, so much confusion. He was in doubt. Arjuna called out to Krishna by the name Madhusudana because Krishna killed the great demon Madhu. Srila Prabhupada tells the story. Toward the beginning of the creation, two terrible demons, Madhu and Kaitab, attacked Brahma to steal the Vedic knowledge from him, to exploit him. At that time, the Lord appeared in an incarnation called Hayagriva and killed these demons. Arjuna had doubt in his mind. And doubt is compared to a demon. Because what does a demon do? A demon, if you associate with a demon, you will become polluted. And ultimately you will become destroyed. You will become demoniac. What you associate with, you become. If you associate with demons, you become demoniac. When we associate with doubt, we become demoniac. Because demon is doubt is demon. So he was crying out, Krishna, see my doubt. I'm drying up. I'm trembling. I'm pale. I'm weeping. My hairs are standing on end. I've lost all composure. I do not know what to do, what not to do. Please. Shishyasthevam sarumam pampapanam. I am your disciple. I surrender to you. He was being consumed by the fire of doubt. But actually, for a devotee, doubt is either the worst enemy or it is actually potentially your best friend. Why is that? Because doubt forces you to either go deeper or fall down. When a devotee has doubt, that means he cannot survive spiritually at the spiritual level that he's on. Forced to go up or fall down. In that doubt, a devotee must inquire and go deeper into the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. He has to, or he cannot survive. He has to take shelter of the Shastra, take shelter of the words of Guru and Sadhu, and he has to go deep into trying to understand what it really means. And he has to take inventory of his own Krishna consciousness. When we are being plagued by doubt, we must question our own sincerity, our own dedication and commitment. And we must fight against all obstacles to improve ourselves. And if we do not do these essential procedures, then we will fall from our position. So sometimes doubt comes into our mind. Sometimes we read something in the scripture that just doesn't make sense. It just doesn't seem logical. Or sometimes we hear something from the Vaishnavas based on Shastra that contradicts all technological scientific discovery. And it creates doubt. Is this just symbolism? Is this mythology? What is happening? Should I just pretend I did not hear it and go on with my service and blank it out of my mind? I've tried, but it keeps coming back. If I cannot accept this, how can I accept the rest? How will I go on with my devotional service? When serious doubt comes in our mind, this is our situation. Actually, it's a benediction. Why? Because if you are sincere in that condition, you will go very deeply into studying why it is said like this, how it is like this. And you will get a deeper realization of what Krishna consciousness is. And simultaneously, you will have to question your own conditionings and your own motivations for being a devotee. And you will strive to improve and purify yourself. And you make great spiritual advancement, and your realizations go deeper and deeper and deeper due to the doubt that has come to your mind. You are impelled. But if you are not sincere, then when this doubt comes, you will use your good intelligence to rationalize and justify material life of sense gratification and living according to your own independent whims. Because after all, it's not true. It cannot be. So why should I go on like this? Why should I give up so much for something I do not even believe? So let me enjoy. While I have the opportunity, while I'm a little bit young, let me utilize my mind and senses to find the pleasures that the whole world is seeking. So that justification to leave Krishna consciousness is also facilitated by doubt. Therefore, doubt is a test. But we find the two greatest scriptures were born from that condition. Arjuna, in doubt, realized he could not survive, he could not even live. He either had to give up his spiritual life and leave Krishna, or he had to go deep and surrender into understanding what is Krishna really want? What is the truth? Who am I? It was in doubt that Arjuna turned to Krishna like he never turned to Krishna before. And Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita to dispel all the doubts of all sincere souls who approach him as Arjuna did. And it is certain, 100%, that all your doubts will be dispelled if you follow the footsteps of Arjuna. And in the process, you will realize Krishna. In the 18th chapter, Arjuna told Krishna, "All my doubts are dispelled. Now I'm ready to fight and do whatever you say." This world is a battlefield. The mind is the greatest enemy. But the mind is perceiving enemies everywhere. The Avanti Brahman, when he was a greedy, materialistic person, he had so many friends and enemies. But then he lost everything, and no one wanted him. This is often a test of who really loves us. It's easy to be loved when you're giving all sorts of facilities to people. But when you cannot give anything, who is still there to even acknowledge your existence? So the Avanti Brahman, everyone hated him. So he took sannyas. But no one respected him. No one said, "Dandavat Maharaj." They passed urine on him. They spit on him. They threw garbage on him. They blasphemed him. They beat him. They kicked him. They stoned him. Their cruel words were so terrible, they were cutting and ripping into his heart. When he would try to eat, they would urinate in his food. Anyways, the Avanti Brahman, eventually living in this most auspicious condition of life, he surrendered to Krishna. And when he surrendered to Krishna, he realized that there's no end. These people are not my enemies. I only have one enemy, and that's my own mind. All these people are my friends. They're all part and parcel of Krishna. They are all the agents of my own karma, delivering me what I need. But because my mind is polluted, it cannot recognize Krishna coming. It is accepting and rejecting according to its own unsteady nature. So this was his condition. If I conquer my mind, I conquer the universe. It is a fact. Because all the enemies in the universe are only enemies because of your own uncontrolled mind. And if you conquer your mind, you conquer all enemies, because there is no more enemies. So therefore, the acharyas say like this: if you conquer your mind, you conquer the entire universe. But if you cannot conquer your mind, the whole universe becomes your enemy, potentially. Arjuna surrendered to Krishna. And he fought. He was willing to fight on the battlefield. In the same way, when we hear the Bhagavad Gita, and actually, if you think of it, we have all seriously come to Krishna consciousness because of doubt. Because the world has been telling us, enjoy, please, you are your body. Even if the religion in our family tells us something else, still, basically, we're being conditioned to think you are your body. You are the enjoyer. If you make nice money, if you get nice prestige, if you have nice family, if you have many nice facilities, you will be happy. And if you believed that, you would never come to Krishna consciousness, where we're telling you that this is all maya, this is all illusion, give it up for your own sense gratification, give it to God. If you believed material propaganda, you would not be sitting here today. But you had doubt. We all had doubt. But this is not the purpose of life. What the politicians, what the school educators, what the philanthropists, what they are telling me is not really what life is about. I doubt what they say. I doubt what this whole world represents. I want to know what is the truth. And you have come to hear the truth from Krishna. And when you hear the truth, you have to be prepared at that time to fight. To fight for the principles of truth. It is a battlefield. You cannot escape this battlefield. Either you surrender to the enemy or you fight the enemy. But you can't get out until you leave this material world. When you go back to Godhead, there's no battlefield, there's no enemies. When you go back to Godhead, battlefield is gone, beautiful cowherd pasture appears. And then we just, everybody assembled on this cowherd pasture is our friends, nice Surabhi cows, and cowherd boys, and gopis, and everyone loves each other because everyone loves Krishna. That is the spiritual world. But this material world is not a cowherd pasture. It is a battlefield. And either you're defeated or you're victorious, but you cannot leave this field as long as you're embodied. The test that we have actually heard properly, the message of Krishna, is dependent on our willingness to fight. To fight the anartas, the unwanted enemies within us, and to fight all of the enemies who are representing illusory energy within the world. And it is a battle. And we have to be armed with proper weapons. And our spiritual master, he has taught us how to fight this battle. You need an army around you, and that is the association of Vaishnavas. You cannot fight this battle alone. Even Arjuna, the most powerful of all warriors with his Gandiva bow, he did not fight alone. He fought in the association of the Pandava army with Krishna. So similarly, we need two things to fight this war. We need the association of devotees, and we need Krishna, who appears in his name. It is the most powerful weapon that Krishna appears within his name. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. Krishna makes his promise that you will be victorious. Just remain faithful to this association and always remember me by chanting my name. And victory is guaranteed. In Srila Prabhupada's purport, he's explaining so wonderfully the life of Arjuna. Parikshit Maharaj was also in a very similar situation. He came to the world in severe crisis, and he left the world in severe crisis. He came to the world after seeing Krishna while he was helplessly being attacked by Ashwatthama's Brahmastra. And when he was still a young man, very strong, with a long life ahead of him, he was cursed to die in 7 days. And he took it as a benediction. And he really didn't even do anything wrong. He made a mistake, but he had no ill motivation. So why fate, destiny, was so cruel, he may have asked. Why, God, I'm your devotee. I've given my life to you since my earliest childhood. I followed all the religious principles very perfectly. He did. He was a perfect king, a perfect representative of the Lord in every respect. Why, due to one little mistake, he was cursed to die in the prime of his youth, at the time when his career was at its peak? He understood that this is the arrangement of the Lord. And he went to the bank of Ganga and sat under that famous banyan tree. And there he met with Srila Shukadeva Goswami, and he expressed his questions. Just as Arjuna, in crisis, inquired from Krishna, Parikshit Maharaj, in great crisis, inquired from Krishna's representative, Shukadeva Goswami. By understanding these pertinent lessons, we should know that this is a world of crisis. We do not know what the next moment will bring. Life and death for anyone, health and pain for anyone, they are just so close to one another. We do not know. By the power of destiny, one little breath can plunge us into a condition where our whole life is changed. But a devotee has this understanding that whatever happens, even the greatest problems, that is the time. That is the time we can turn to Krishna. That is the time we can go deeper and deeper and deeper into our spiritual consciousness, deeper and deeper in our devotion to the Lord. And when times are good, from the material point of view, everything is going as per our plan, then we should not think how wonderful. We should think, situation,
Krishna is giving me devotional service. Therefore, this should be our standard of evaluating, not by how nicely things are going on the external way, but how we are being given an opportunity for spiritual advancement, an opportunity to help others make spiritual advancement. When we are given the opportunity for devotional service, that is wonderful. And that opportunity is always there. In good times or bad times, everything is a good time if we have the opportunity for devotional service. By hearing the glories of the Lord, by chanting the names and glories of the Lord, this is our perfection. This is our wealth. This is our treasure in life. So, Parikshit Maharaj is being explained to be as good as Arjuna, as a bowman, as irresistible as fire, and unsurpassable as the ocean. These are the qualities of Krishna. Because Parikshit Maharaj is going to surrender his life to Krishna, they are explaining in so many ways that Krishna is going to empower him in the most wonderful, wonderful ways. Is there any questions?
Maharaj, in the lecture you said that we have to this world is a battlefield and we have to fight. Mind is the greatest enemy. And all the while we are fighting against anarthas and the illusory energy in the world. And you also said that you have to be armed with proper weapons. That is, we need the association of Vaishnavas. But many times, Maharaj, we know that what we are doing is wrong. Or sometimes we are even convinced that what we are doing is not wrong. And when a Vaishnava tells us that what you are doing is wrong or it's not right, even though that's a weapon, we don't accept it. It's a fight, no doubt, but we don't accept it. We think, no, I mean, what I'm doing is right. We are so obstinate and stubborn. Then how do we fight this war?
You cannot fight without becoming humble. Because if you give in to pride and you act according to pride, you are acting on behalf of your enemy. So we must become humble. It is through humility that Krishna empowers us. It is through humility that we actually have the real strength of the association of devotees surrounding us and protecting us. And what does humility mean? It means that, yes, the mind is egoistic. The mind wants to take a role of God, being the all-knower of everything. But the intelligence understands that my mind is wicked. My mind is trying to cheat me. My mind is trying to induce me to offend Vaishnavas. My mind is trying to induce me to glorify myself. My mind is trying to induce me to follow the ways of the ego on one side and the senses on another. Therefore, you should not trust your mind. You should use your good intelligence and accept. If a superior devotee is telling me what is right, I may not understand, but I should accept, because I do understand that I do not know. And if you accept, gradually you will understand. We do not understand because our ego will not allow it. When somebody is too much attached to something, they cannot understand how this attachment is wrong. And even deep down, when they do understand,
They won't admit it. They won't recognize it. It's the nature of attachment. So we are attached. So when someone tells us this attachment is not good, that is the first reaction. You don't understand. You don't know. You don't know what's behind the whole situation. You don't know my perfectly pure Krishna conscious motives. Although it appears one way, it's not like that. You cannot understand the mind of a great Vaishnav. Don't try to see things. Don't try to understand me through your sense perception. You can only understand me through pure unalloyed devotion. That is the tendency of our false ego. Because we're attached. We're not willing to recognize. And we want to somehow or other convince others that they are seeing something that is not there. But usually, everyone in the world sees exactly what's there. And you just look like a great fool. And the more you fight, the more you struggle, the more you try to justify and defend your position, the more you look like a fool. So the proper action is to understand how Maya is tricking me, because I'm too much attached. But these are my well-wishers. These are experienced people with wonderful realizations. If they are explaining these things to me, it must be true. And we should act accordingly. That is humility. That is how we make spiritual advancement. Yes.
Maharaj, from the example of Avanti Brahman and Parikshit Maharaj, it appears that when they had a problem in their life, at least externally on external platform, they adopted a very passive stand, not trying to do anything actively to change the situation.
Arjuna?
Parikshit Maharaj, the curse came to him and it was externally, it was very passive. He could have cursed back, or probably he could have sort of retaliated and this thing. But it was a very passive stand. Avanti Brahman also, he was, as you explained, so many things were being done to him, but more or less passive stand. The activity was mainly internal, to see everything as being enemy of the Lord, and to more in the mind. It is more internal activity. So is this the nature of dealing with things when difficult situations come? It's not so much external that we have to do. It's more we have to go inside and sort of get the things done internally to understand how it is all in the enemy of the Lord. So is that the more the proper way of dealing with difficult situations?
Simultaneously, the realization of the Lord is something that comes within the heart. But we should see how Parikshit Maharaj, he also surrendered many things external. He gave up his whole kingdom. He gave up his entire family. He gave up eating. He gave up sleeping. This is also a battle. Attachment to family. Attachment to wealth and comfort. Attachment to eating and sleeping. He gave up all those things. Those are external activities. He fought against all of them. Of course, because of his great spiritual advancement, for him, it was an easy fight. For us to do those things, very difficult. But ultimately, he surrendered to hearing from his spiritual master. And through that process, Krishna was realized most sublime within his own heart. So our surrender has to be on every level, especially if we are in a neophyte condition. Then the external battle is much more difficult. As I say, Maharaj Parikshit gave up all the comforts of the world, gave up all family connections, and gave up eating and sleeping. Because of his advancement, it was easy for him. But for you, it would be a great battle, I believe. So similarly, when we come to Krishna consciousness, chant 16 rounds every day. Follow the four regulative principles. No gossip, no rumor, no aparads to devotees. Perform this duty. These are external. We have to fight against so many internal and external oppositions to perform these activities. But we must do them. But we must know the purpose of doing them is to please Krishna, to please Guru and the Vaishnavas. And we also have to understand that the purpose of doing all these things in pleasing Krishna is to get deeper and deeper internal realizations. We must fight against our ego. That is the ultimate war. That is the ultimate war in our spiritual fight. Just like Arjuna killed many soldiers, but then he had to face Karna. And actually, Karna was better. Krishna had to personally arrange for him to kill Karna. So similarly, in this battle of life, we will have to fight against materialistic propaganda that appears in so many ways. We're going to have to fight against so many physical attachments, so many mental attachments. We're going to have to fight against the atheists, the scientists, atheistic scientists, the sense gratifiers, our temptation for television and cinemas and cinema songs. We have to battle against these great warriors and foods that are not offered to Krishna. And we'll have to fight against cricket matches. In India, you have all different types of soldiers than in the West. But same soldiers in different uniforms. And then you have to fight against your own anger, your own envy, your own lust and greed. But after you fight against all these, then you meet Karna in the form of your own ego. And then you realize, I can't do it. And then Krishna teaches you, this is the process. Turn to me. And then you have to, when you come face to face to your own ego, the last final battle in the battlefield of life, then you have to utterly surrender to Krishna. And this is how sometimes we see very advanced devotees, they fall down from devotional service. They're great generals, they're great warriors, they're heroic. They preach like lions and they defeat so many. So many battles, so many warriors, so many great obstacles.
But then when they come before Karana, you see, from the beginning to the end, everybody knew ultimately this battle is going to be decided between Arjuna and Karna. And everything else of the battle was just something in between. Right? And Yudhisthira and Krishna and everybody knew this whole battle with all these millions of soldiers and all these phalanxes and all these formations and everything going on and all the military organizations and all the weapons and all the horses and elephants and chariots, it's all going to come down to whether Arjuna wins or Karna wins. If Karna wins, a dharma will rule the world. And if Arjuna wins, dharma will prevail. Krishna will prevail. So much fighting, so many women, Jayadratha, this, that, all these things are happening. And then it came to the climax. Arjuna was face to face with Karna. And Krishna told Arjuna, you cannot kill him. He's better than you. Just do what I say and you'll be victorious. Arjuna had to surrender to Krishna. Krishna told Arjuna to kill him in a way that was completely unacceptable by Arjuna. He had to surrender his own idea of I know what's right, which is the hardest thing. To surrender to washing floors or washing pots is not so difficult. But to surrender when you know something's right and you know something else is not for you. But Krishna says, no, do it my way. That's surrender. That was the only way he could defeat Karna. So similarly, within our spiritual life, so many obstacles will come. Temptations for great wealth and grandeur. Temptations for so many forms of immorality. Little temptations coming every day for just little ways to enjoy. Let me listen to this. Let me taste this. Let me see this. And we're battling against all these soldiers throughout our life, and then the bigger soldiers and the bigger soldiers. But ultimately, we have to face our own false ego. And sometimes big, big people, they can do all the rest. But when it comes to their own false ego, face to face with them, they're not willing to accept Gurudev knows better than me. Krishna knows better than me. And the false ego prevails. And such great, great generals are wounded on the battlefield. And it may take lifetimes for them to heal themselves and get the strength to again go back into the field. That's why sometimes we see that even advanced, experienced devotees who've done so much more than us, how do they fall from devotional service? This is the answer. Even after Arjuna killed so many great warriors, if he didn't surrender to Krishna when he faced Karna, he would have lost the battle. Or at least he would have been severely wounded. He wouldn't have been able to win the battle. Either he'd lose it, or it would just keep going on until he was willing to do this. So therefore, we have to become very humble. Ultimately, that's the only way to win. The only thing that can destroy the false ego is humility. Why? Because in humility you say, yes, Krishna, you know, I surrender to you.
I am yours. Does that answer your question? But we'll discuss that another time.
Maharaj, we see that according to the Bhagavad Gita, whenever Lord Krishna comes, as per Bhagavad Gita, he's telling Arjuna that first of all, kill this demon of doubt. And by establishing the supremacy of truth, usually the Lord, you know, helps humanity at large to kill the demon of doubt if they want to. But then we see that in Treta Yuga, when he comes as Lord Ramachandra, at that time when an insignificant washerman doubts the chastity of his wife, at that time instead of, you know, dispelling the doubt by establishing the supremacy of truth, you know, he does something that will, I mean, that creates a doubt for eternity, like, you know, in the minds of people. So what is the secret behind this?
So you are doubting you are doubting the judgment of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yes? You cannot always understand, but you have to accept that he knows because he is the absolute truth. But that is actually the answer. But on another level, just to satisfy your own curious mind, he did destroy the doubt, but he did it his way. He killed Ravana, he killed Kumbhakarna, he certainly could have killed the washerman. But the washerman was not his enemy, because the enemy was the doubt that he was maintaining Sita, even though she was with Ravana. So he did kill the doubt by sending Sita away. The washerman or no one else could doubt after that. Did he not? But he had a purpose to fulfill in doing it this way. He already killed so many demons, he didn't have to prove to any more how he can kill demons with his bows and arrows. In this pastime, he wanted to prove something else. He wanted to reveal something else. How, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he was playing the role of a king. And how a king, in order to protect the dignity of his rule, he has to be of spotless character. And to preserve that spotless character, a king should be willing to forsake or renounce even that which is most dear to his heart for the sake of the citizens. He wanted to reveal his absolutely selfless service to the citizens of Ayodhya. He revealed his opulence of strength when he killed Ravana, but he exhibited his opulence of renunciation, forsaking what is most dear to his heart for the upliftment of others. That was his purpose. Does that answer your question? And also, from another level, he wanted to facilitate the ecstasy of love in separation between he and Sita
which is more intensely sublime than even love in union. But this is a very high understanding, which you and me may not be able to comprehend. In fact, no one but Sita and Ram can comprehend the nature of that love and separation. One more question? Oh, okay. Akrura is here. His hand was first. I'm sure you'll get another chance. Someday. Yes.
Maharaj, everyone is really daily facing the war actually.
Huh?
Everyone, whether a devotee or not, grihastha or brahmachari or any other ashram, everyone is truly facing this battle, but there must be very few who realize it. And actually what I see is, I keep on inviting the enemies, not that the enemies attack of their own, but it seems that I invite them and then they come to me, and when I see that they are attacking, then I defend them. So that sort of thing is happening quite often. So one doesn't really realize that it's a battle. And he gets wounded and he doesn't realize that he is wounded, and he tries to enjoy it actually. So this is a very, very sad situation. How one can realize that truly he is inviting the battle, he is getting wounded, and he is not realizing that he is in a real sad situation. So if one realizes, open physical war, one sees it and one defends it. But this war is so subtle, it's very difficult to realize that it is a war at all. And keeps on inviting enemies, come to me like that. Gets wounded. So how to realize it at first, that it's the war and I am inviting my enemies and I am getting wounded daily?
How to realize it?
Yes.
You see, when you surrender to the enemy, then you become the enemy. You become part of the enemy. Then you don't have to fight your enemies anymore. You've surrendered to your enemies. Then there's no fight. You'll be exploited. You'll be misled. Your human life will be wasted. You will suffer miserably. But there's no fight, because you've given yourself to the enemy. That's why material life seems so nice. People do not want to become devotees, because then you have to start fighting your enemy. But material life means you become friends with your enemy. Your enemy wants to destroy you, but you become the best friend. You're always welcoming. Please, come. Have a nice sitting place. Drink some nice water. Therefore, we must hear Bhagavad Gita, hear Srimad Bhagavatam in the association of devotees regularly. If you do not do that, you will not be able to understand what is truth and what is illusion and discriminate between the two. Sravanam kirtanam vishnu smaranam bhada sevanam. There are 9 processes of devotional service. All these are ways of fighting the enemy of illusion and attracting the power of God into our lives. But without shravanam, without properly hearing, you cannot properly perform any of the other devotional activities, because you will not know what to do. So you must nourish your intelligence daily by hearing Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. then it will be explained, and you must hear submissively. Then you will understand. And what does Krishna say to Arjuna? In many places in Gita, he says, hear from me. Now I will explain. It is through hearing, submissively. Tadvidhi pananipatena pari prashnena sevaya upadekshanti te jnanam jnaninastattva darshana. This is the process. The first principle is to inquire submissively, to hear. That's how we understand. And then when we act according to what we hear by rendering service, that is how we develop realization of what we have understood. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki, Srila Radha Gopinath ji ki.